The problem is that you don't know what you're up against. The police are not required in any way to put their cards on the table and to tell you what they really suspect and what they really intend. And they are skillful and highly trained in ways of getting you to admit things that can be used to help convict you, even if you're innocent.
Now, I should say you hold this opinion not just for people who are suspected of a crime and may be called into the police station. You're talking about people who are witnesses, anybody.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, a lot of people, when they hear me give them this advice, they frequently make the mistake of thinking that, well, it would be different, right, if I'm not a suspect, if I'm just a victim. That'd be different, right? And the answer, unfortunately, no, it isn't. I wish I could say that our legal system required the police to be honest with you about what their intentions and expectations are. But that's not the way it is. The police sometimes will lie to you, and they'll say that we know you weren't involved. We know you had nothing to do with this. We know you're not a murderer, man. They'll say, but we want to use you to help prosecute the other ones who were there. So you've got to tell us what you saw while you were there. And tragically, far too many people take the bait, and they think they can trust the police. They start giving information that they think will be used to prosecute somebody else, and then they find that the evidence is actually used against them as well.
A point you make in your book and in your many talks is that the police are actually trained to sort of almost get you talking, get you maybe to incriminate yourself.
Oh, and they're very good at it, too. Sometimes they'll do it by exaggerating the strength of their case against you. They'll say, we know you were there, we've got a video that proves you were there, and your fingerprints have already been identified from the scene. And your friend Rocky, he's down the hall right now spilling his guts out, and he says you were there, and he says you're the one who pulled the trigger. And by the way, unbeknownst to you, every word of this is false. Because down the hall they're lying to Rocky and saying that you're the one who's blaming him, you follow? And sometimes people, even innocent people, under these circumstances, when they hear this kind of thing, they think, oh my God, I don't know how this could be true. I know I'm innocent. I can't believe these people are telling them these things. But if that's what the police have got on me, then I'm screwed. So maybe I better just do what I can to work out the best deal I can. And then even if they don't confess, they'll at least admit that they were there, and they've just given the prosecutor maybe a crucial piece of evidence that they wouldn't have otherwise had.
But there are a lot of people who would say, I'm innocent, I didn't do anything wrong, so I'm just going to tell the police everything I know. You say that's not a good idea either.
No, unfortunately it isn't. The book I wrote, You Have the Right to Remain Innocent, gives numerous examples of real-world innocent people who got themselves convicted of crimes they didn't commit, and some of them because of nothing that the police had other than truthful information that they gave to the police. One example, Michael Morton was a man who was tragically the victim of a horrible crime. Some intruder broke into his home and murdered his wife while he was gone away to work. And he was terribly bereaved when he heard the horrible news. And, of course, like almost anybody in his position, he thinks, well, I'll tell the police everything I know. And he gave them all kinds of information. And, tragically, the information that he gave them, even though it was true, was used to actually convict him of the crime that we later learned through DNA evidence he never even committed. A man named Glenn Ford, who was convicted in New Orleans, Louisiana, and sentenced to death. He spent more than 30 years on death row before it was recently revealed that he was totally innocent, and the police had no evidence against him except information that he gave them. And many of your listeners are thinking, how could that be? How could you possibly get yourself convicted if you're innocent and you tell the truth? Sometimes, unfortunately, for reasons you have no control over, you might become the victim of an absolutely terrible but tragic coincidence. In the case of Michael Morton, for example, he confessed to the police that the night before somebody else broke into his house and murdered his wife, he and his wife had had a mild disagreement and a fight that night before. And the police and the prosecutor and eventually the jury concluded that was the evidence of his motive to commit the crime. They thought, how likely is it that somebody else is going to break into the house the day after you happen to have a fight with your wife? They thought that was too far-fetched, but we now know that's what happened. The better course is to keep your mouth shut. Then you and your lawyer will never have to try to explain to the jury these terrible coincidences that they won't even know about if you don't tell them about these details.
Well, this whole issue of keeping your mouth shut, you and I and everyone has heard people take the Fifth Amendment, the famous Fifth Amendment. I refuse to testify. I refuse to talk on the grounds that it may incriminate me. And your first reaction, your human nature reaction, is to say this person has something to hide. This person must be guilty.
As a result of a couple of recent decisions, it's gotten to the point where the Fifth Amendment has now become what I call the right that dare not speak its name. Because if you tell the police I'm taking the Fifth, or I refuse to answer on the grounds that it may incriminate me, there's more and more recent case law that makes it easier than ever before, sometimes, for the police and the prosecutor to persuade the judge that the jury should be allowed to learn about that fact. And at that point, for goodness sake, they'll essentially argue that your invocation of this constitutional privilege was tantamount to a confession, which is highly unfair and highly misleading. But the better way to avoid that problem now is don't even mention your right to remain silent. Just tell the police you want to exercise your right to a lawyer under the Sixth Amendment. Take the Sixth, we might say. Tell the police,
sixth.
Yeah, sure, I'll talk to you. No problem, but I just want to have a lawyer here first. That's all. Just give me a lawyer first, and then we'll talk.
Well, let's talk about some routine encounters that people have with the police. Most of those are traffic stops, basically.
Yes.
So you're pulled over. Should you not speak to the police officer when you're pulled over, or what? How should you react?
Great question. I'm glad you asked. No, that's a different situation. As I mentioned in the book, this advice that I'm giving you doesn't apply in the same way to a routine traffic stop for a lot of obvious reasons. The most obvious is that when it comes to routine traffic infractions like speeding or not wearing your seatbelt, the police have a lot of discretion whether to show you a little mercy and let you go with a warning this time. And whether they decide to exercise that discretion has a great deal to do with whether they think you're being suitably respectful, remorseful, and contrite. And so I definitely recommend, I mean, when I've been pulled over by the police for speeding, I would definitely answer the questions. I would talk to them. I'd be very respectful and so forth. But when the police tell you they're investigating a murder or arson or kidnapping, forget about it. You can't talk to them about those things under any circumstances.
Let me take it a step further on these traffic stops. The police officer stops you for not signaling before you make your turn. But then pretty soon he's saying, can we search the car? Can we do a body search? Possibly looking for drugs, I would imagine. What about in those cases? Do you say no? At what risk do you say no?
Yes, you say no. You be as polite as you possibly can. Don't be disrespectful in any way. But let the police know that, no, I will not agree to let you search the vehicle. And no, I will not consent to a body search or any other sort of search.
Are you setting yourself up then for resisting arrest or getting the charge, getting some sort of a charge?
Hopefully not. I mean, if the police officers are honest men and women of integrity, they cannot legally arrest you just because you chose to assert your constitutional rights. Now, I don't want to sound naive, let's be honest. The reality is that not all police officers are men and women of unimpeachable integrity. Most of them are. I hope the vast majority of them are. But we know for a fact that some of them are a little less scrupulous, and there is a risk that if you tell the police that you're exercising your rights, the worst among them might become incensed, outraged, offended. They'll take it as a slight to their authority, and they may hold it against you. Worst case, they may actually subject you to physical violence. The good news is that officers who are that unethical and that dishonest, I hope, are very, very few and far between. But the bad news is if you ever find yourself falling into the clutches of a police officer like that, there's not much you can do to eliminate the risk that they're going to make up some sort of lie about you.
But if everyone just clammed up, you know, didn't talk to police, if they were called as a witness or brought in, wouldn't it make it very hard then to solve crimes? Wouldn't it be a much longer process then to find out who really is guilty?
In the short run, yes. It would definitely pose a significant impediment to law enforcement, without a doubt, yes. Because the reality is, right now, an enormous percentage of all criminal cases are cleared and closed on the basis of confessions or other statements made by the defendant. You know, a good friend of mine, a prosecutor, has once said to me that, she said, don't tell too many people about their right to remain silent, she said, because I'll never be able to clear all my cases. Mm-hmm. Which is why so many people say, well then, why tell people about the Fifth Amendment at all? Why not just let all these guilty people continue to talk themselves in a jail cell? That's where they belong. The problem is that these methods of investigation have proven to be too effective. They work on the innocent and the guilty.
Talk about that, the scope of the number of people who have been set free by, say, the Innocence Project.
Hundreds. Yeah, that's right. Hundreds of people have been freed by the Innocence Project. People who were convicted, many of them, by the way, on the basis of information and statements that they voluntarily supplied to the police. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. No sane observer believes that we've found all the innocent people who are behind bars and we've got them all out now. Sure, the guilty ought to be convicted, but the innocent need to be acquitted. Innocent people should not be going to jail for crimes they didn't commit.
Well, it's certainly an important conversation. You're trying to get started here. We've been talking with James Duane. He is a professor in the law school at Regent University in Virginia Beach. Thanks so much for talking about this.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
I'm Judy Valente.